Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
Now, there's an image that I want to put up on the screen here. I want you to see this visual. And you see in the center is the tabernacle. And so this is that place where God's presence is. And then surrounding the tabernacle are the various tribes of the Israelites. And so the picture is clear. It's a picture of God dwelling in the midst of his people.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his series titled The Story of God. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on Exodus chapter 40, verses 1 through 16, in a message titled The Law, a Shadow of the Good Things to Come. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
Today, we're going to be looking at the tabernacle and the priesthood, that these are both intricately woven together, and they were an essential part of the covenant that God had made with the nation. We're going to read from the 40th chapter of Exodus, and we'll finish up with verse 17. So in verse 1, then the Lord said to Moses, set up a tabernacle, the tent of meeting on the first day of the first month. Place the ark of the covenant law in it and shield the ark with the curtain. Bring in the table and set out what belongs on it. Then bring in the lampstand and set up its lamps. Place the gold altar of incense in front of the ark of the covenant law and put the curtain at the entrance to the tabernacle. Place the altar of burnt offering in front of the entrance to the tabernacle, the tent of meeting. Place the basin between the tent of meeting and the altar and put water in it. Set up the courtyard around it and put the curtain at the entrance to the courtyard. Take the anointing oil and anoint the tabernacle and everything in it. Consecrate it and all its furnishings, and it will be holy. Then anoint the altar of burnt offering and all its utensils. Consecrate the altar, and it will be most holy. Anoint the basin and its stand and consecrate them. Bring Aaron and his sons to the entrance of the tent of meeting and wash them with water. Then dress Aaron in the sacred garments, anoint him and consecrate him so he may serve me as priest. Bring his sons and dress them in tunics. Anoint them just as you anointed their father so that they may serve me as priest. Their anointing will be to a priesthood that will continue throughout their generations. Moses did everything just as the Lord commanded him, so the tabernacle was set up on the first day of the first month in the second year. So I've entitled the message, The Law, A Shadow of the Good Things to Come. So I want to begin with a quote regarding the tabernacle that we just read about. And here it is. At this lonely place in the midst of the chaos of the wilderness, a new creation comes into being. In the midst of disorder, there is order. The tabernacle pictures the world order as God intended. The priest of the sanctuary going about their appointed courses is like everything in creation performing its liturgical service. The sun, the trees, human beings. The people of Israel carefully encamped around the tabernacle in their midst constitutes the beginning of God's bringing creation back to what it originally was intended to be. In and through this people, God is on the move to a new creation for all. God's presence in the tabernacle is a statement about God's intended presence in the entire world. The glory manifest there is to stream out into the larger world as a kingdom of priests. They have a role of mediating this glory to the entire cosmos. So, I mean, think about it. From the beginning of creation, you remember that God had dwelt in the very beginning with Adam and Eve. They dwelt there with God. And then because sin entered in, they were expelled from the garden. They were expelled from the presence of God. And there was no longer a designated place on the earth where God's presence resided. And now all of that is changing. And this tent, this tabernacle, this is that place that is, as that writer said there, this is the beginning of the new creation. It's the beginning of God dwelling with humanity once again. Now, there's an image that I want to put up on the screen here. I want you to see. I want you to see this visual. And you see in the center is the tabernacle. And so this is that place where God's presence is. And then surrounding the tabernacle are the various tribes of the Israelites. And so the picture is clear. It's a picture of God dwelling in the midst of his people. As the presence of God among Israel was seen through the tabernacle in their midst, upon closer inspection, the tabernacle was also a reminder of their inability to freely and directly access God. So it's a little bit paradoxical because it is, on the one hand, it's intended to show God among his people. But the closer you zoom in to the tabernacle itself, you realize that it is compartmentalized in order to prevent the people from drawing as near to God as might be possible. The tabernacle consisted of the outer court, the sanctuary, and the most holy place. The people, those dwelling in the tents, could come only to the outer court. The sanctuary, only the priest could come to the sanctuary, and only the high priest could enter the most holy place, and that only once a year, not without the blood of a sacrificial lamb. Now, as we go forward in history and into the new covenant, the author of the letter to the Hebrews, he is giving us insight into all of these things. Listen to what he said. He said, "For a tabernacle was set up." He doesn't deal with the outer court. He says, "For a tabernacle was set up, and in the first room, which is called the holy place, were the lampstand, the table, and the consecrated bread." So that's the sanctuary. "Behind the second curtain was a tent called the most holy place," or we sometimes refer to it as the Holy of Holies. "It had the gold altar of incense and the Ark of the Covenant," we read about that in Exodus, "covered with gold on all sides, in which was a gold jar containing the manna, Aaron's staff that budded, and the tablets of the covenant." He goes on, "The cherubim of glory were above the ark, overshadowing the mercy seat. With these things prepared like this, the priest entered the first room repeatedly, performing their ministry, but the high priest alone enters the second room, and he does that only once a year, and never without blood, which he offers for himself and for the sins of the people, or for the sins the people have committed in ignorance. Here's the key. The Holy Spirit making it clear that the way into the most holy place had not yet been accessible while the first tabernacle was still standing. So you see, this is kind of the paradox of it. God is dwelling in their midst, but there is still a degree of separation from God because of sin. And there is no direct access into his presence except once a year, and only one person can access his presence. And that one person could access his presence for the sole purpose of making an offering on what was called the Day of Atonement. So God was among them, but as we see, still to some degree, there was separation due to their sin. For fellowship with God to be experienced and to be maintained, sin had to be dealt with. So as much as these are the covenant people of God, as much as he's redeemed them out of bondage in Egypt, as much as he is with them in this covenant that he gave to them on Mount Sinai, as much as all of that is a reality, there's still the sin issue. And sin can only be dealt with through the shedding of blood. For without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. And so in our last study, you remember, we saw how God had covenanted with the people and had given them the law. Remember, we talked about the Ten Commandments. Char mentioned that they're actually referred to as the 10 words. And so, of course, the law was much more comprehensive than just that, but that's the essence of it. That is the core of the law, those 10 words. And remember, the first of the 10 words was, "I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me." The people agreed to the covenant, yet before Moses had returned with the tablets of the covenant, the people had already broken the first commandment by, you perhaps remember the story, making the golden calf and hailing it as the God who brought them out of Egypt. So the thing that we need to see is that there is this continued need for atonement. The people are sinners. They're God's covenant people, but they're prone to sin. And so in order for the fellowship with God to be maintained, there has to be this continual shedding of blood that takes place. So the reality of Israel's sin required an atoning sacrifice for fellowship with Yahweh to be maintained. Now, the word atonement, or to atone, it means to cover. I just mentioned the Day of Atonement. In the Hebrew, it's Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur means the day of covering. So it is the day when sin would be covered through the high priest entering in to the most holy place and sprinkling the blood of the sacrifice upon what was called the mercy seat. I just want to give us just a really quick look at the sacrifices without going into all of the detail of the various sacrifices. But I want us to see that this sacrificial system is integral to the covenant. You don't have a covenant without this. So in other words, God is not just simply saying, okay, Israel, now you're my people and I'm your God because I redeemed you from Egypt. But I am going to be your God and you are going to be my people, but that is going to require that sin be constantly dealt with. So when you turn the page from Exodus chapter 40, you go to Leviticus chapter 1. And in the first five chapters of Leviticus, you have the various offerings spelled out. So you have the burnt offering, the grain offering, the peace offering, the sin offering, the trespass offering, and you can go on. There are others as well. But what we just really need to see is sort of, you know, what was taking place with the offerings in general. So let me read this to you. Peace and fellowship between a human being and God could not be achieved as long as sin created a barrier between them. So means had to be found to deal with that problem. Sin could be either unintentional or by choice. The rituals of Leviticus provided atonement only for unintentional sin. Note that, only for unintentional sin. The person who sinned by choice, and the idea of sinning by choice is to sin defiantly, or the Hebrew could speak of sinning high-handedly. In other words, sort of raising your fist to heaven in defiance of God. That's what is being spoken of here. And that person who sinned by choice, who sinned defiantly, was forever cut off from God's people. Now, the removal of unintentional sin, this is what these sacrifices are all for, required appropriate sacrifices. These included not only the bull and the lamb, but also the goat, the dove, and even grain. The nature of the offering depended on the status of the offerer. Thus, the sin of the priest required a bull, the blood of which was sprinkled within the holy place of the tabernacle. The purification of the whole congregation required the same as for the priest. So the priest is in many ways, he's representative of God to the people. So if the priest sins, the sacrifice is a more significant, if you will, it's a more significant sacrifice. It's the same as if the whole congregation sinned. So the sacrifice for one priest sinning is the same sacrifice as for the whole of the congregation. Now, the unintentional sin of a ruler was atoned for by the sacrifice of a male goat, the blood being applied to the great altar. An ordinary person, someone who was not a ruler or part of the priesthood, an ordinary person presented a female goat or lamb, or even, if poor, two doves or a handful of flour, if it wasn't possible for them to provide the other. And so when all of this was done with proper ritual and intent, the sin would be forgiven. So what an Israelite would know as they came out of their tent and saw the tabernacle in their midst, they would know on one level, God is with us. God is present among us. But on another level, they would know we can't get close to him. We can't get as close to him as is possible. And the only way we can draw near to him is through the priesthood mediating through the sacrifices. So the sacrifices, like the entire covenant itself, were both a temporary and an incomplete measure, unable to truly and permanently purify the people. Remember, we talked about that last time. Char had mentioned, and this is so important for us to see, that the law was, it was incomplete. It wasn't the ideal or the perfect situation. And so, as we talked about, sometimes when we're reading in the law and we see something, we think, wow, that, I don't know, that just seems, could that have been right? Well, remember, like we've said, God was making accommodation at times, not intending through the law to bring in a perfect system, but keeping sin at bay so the people would not self-destruct, so that he might ultimately bring in that better covenant. Again, the author of Hebrews explains. He says, for the law, having a shadow of the good things to come and not the very image of the things, can never with these same sacrifices, listen to that again, can never with these same sacrifices, which they offer continually, year by year, make those who approach perfect. For then would they not have ceased to be offered? For the worshipers once purified would have had no more consciousness of sins. But in those sacrifices, there is a reminder of sins every year. For it is not possible that the blood of bulls and goats could take away sin. It was not possible that the blood of bulls and goats could take away sin. All they could do was cover, a temporary measure. But they could never take away sin. They could never bring the worshiper to that place of being completely out of that realm of sin that prevented them from coming into the presence of God. So those sacrifices, the priesthood, the entire Levitical system were ultimately signposts. See, the law was pointing forward to something better. We need to understand that about the law. You know, there are people today who, Christians today, sometimes get hung up on different aspects of the law. You know, the most common is the Sabbath. Most commonly, there will be Christians. Now, of course, the Sabbath is fine. If you just want to take a Sabbath, you should. But sometimes Christians get caught up in this idea that the Sabbath is a necessary thing. And of course, they see the Sabbath as Saturday. So, you know, you should be worshiping on Saturday, not on Sunday. And it just becomes this legalistic mess. And even occasionally, people will do that with the dietary laws as well. There are occasionally Christians who will frown on you for having bacon and eggs in the morning. Right. Because, you know, after all, the pig is an unclean animal. Or if you like to go out and have shrimp or lobster or other crustaceans, you know, there are times when Christians will get hung up on this stuff. But we have to remember that it was a shadow. It was pointing. It was a signpost. It was pointing to something else. Paul says to the Colossians, who were buying into some of that stuff, they were obviously buying into the idea that Christians need to keep the Sabbath and the various festivals and so forth. Paul says to them in Colossians 2:17, he specifically says, these things were a shadow of the things to come, but the substance is of Christ. So all of that to say, don't get hung up on the law. The law is meant to point you to something greater.
Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Pastor Brian. With all the chaos, unrest, and uncertainty in our world, behind it all is an unseen realm where a spiritual battle is being waged. And this spiritual battle not only affects the world collectively, but even our lives individually. This month's book, The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Pastor Brian, will give you an understanding of the battle that is raging behind the scenes. You will understand the enemy who is waging war against you, his tactics, and how you can be equipped to emerge victorious. As people of God, we must be aware of the spiritual battle we're all involved in, the sophisticated ways in which we're constantly being attacked, and the provision for victory we have in Jesus. If you want to be equipped for the spiritual battle we're engaged in, or to be able to help others become equipped, we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-733. 6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Pastor Brian. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together the Story of God series. Back to Basics is the listener-supported preaching and teaching ministry of Pastor Brian Brodersen.